Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
And last thing, I was like, where are my earphones? And then so I'm just going to use Wilders. They go with a T-shirt. They go with the badge.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And I was like, oh, Tony James, fuck it. I haven't even got the blue light in the back. I haven't put the clap lines down. Apart from the fact that I can't sit. If you see me doing this, it's because I've had treatment on my arse skin this morning. On it, not in
What's
it.
Going on then? What have you got? Have you got what do you think you have? Or what?
We know what kind of the issue is. So I had that race denier in Andorra, France. Pika Pika. Mm. So yeah, 11,000 meters of climb in 100K. But since I had a race at the end of June, last weekend of June, where I felt a bit ropey and did all right, I was fit in that. And then from that point, I was just feeling like shit, basically, through the summer.
Yeah.
And so I had about a window of about 3 weeks to get fit for Pika Pika. So I was literally just going up and down.
Mm.
Like you probably saw, like Trivan 4 times.
Yeah, I
Penarol
saw that,
a couple of times. Those kind of reps, because most of the climbs at Pika was 30%.
Yeah.
And I just overdid it, and my SI joint got
mended
inflamed.
The event.
Then did the event. Weirdly, like I had some treatment before it and couldn't really feel it in the event. I could feel that I didn't have any knee lift, essentially. Like I couldn't breathe, but I didn't have the knee lift. And I'm usually good at running downhill. I had to be really careful downhill. So the whole event was like good to be there, but just got through what I could. And then I think mixed in with the traveling, like it's 14, 15 hours of traveling to drive back. And like that week, I could just feel it, everything tightening up again. So I can't complain too much about the event, but afterwards I've paid for it. And so the SI joint, that's calmed down, that's loosened up, I've strengthened my core, hip flexors needed strengthening, but then it's left like you're like piriformis and that is just clinging on for dear life. It's just like got a clamp on my ass, basically. So any bit of running, I have to be very careful to see where the point is, where it's going to flare up and go, right, that's my limit. Go back to the strength. That's my limit. Go back to the strength.
Yeah.
15 minutes in, let's introduce James Bezant, who has in the last few weeks completed the world's toughest mountain race, Dragon's Back.
Survived.
It was the world's toughest mountain race at 5 days, so at 6 days it must be. Self-proclaimed world's toughest mountain race, not to take anything away from it. And we're going to just chat to James about why the Dragon's Back, how it went, and all that good stuff, mate. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. Survived is the key word of that. I don't think there's... there is obviously completion, but it's
the war of attrition, unfortunately for me, with that bloody event.
Yeah. It's... Let's go back to the beginning then.
Sorry. What,
like, because obviously I've known you for a few years now, James. Mm. I've worked with James as a coach. That's why we've got probably a good relationship. But going into it, why the Dragon's Back? And yeah, just start with that. Why the Dragon's Back, mate?
A couple years ago, well, I'd say 5 or 6 years ago, my cousin sent me a link to it. He's Welsh. He's a classic Welsh person, very proud to be Welsh. You know, he's always into his endurance stuff as well. And he's like, have a look at this event. It's mega. Like, and I looked at it, and this was actually while I was serving in the Marines, right? I remember him saying it, and he showed it to me, and I was just like, fuck that. That is impossible. Just like, when you watch those earlier editions, obviously when Berghaus had it, you know, it wasn't as pretty as Montaigne do it nowadays. They do a great job, but back in the day, I think it was just a bit more raw, the footage that they showed, you know? And I just looked at that, and I was just like, oh my God, that's impossible. Anyway, started getting back into running about 2 years ago. Just, I wouldn't say it massively comes natural for me, but I've always been able to run, as in like, it may not be fast or anything, but I've always just been able to, if I wanted to, I've always just been able to say crack a marathon. So I know that is like not a bad place to start. It's not going to be Kipchoge times, of course not, but I've always had that sort of general fitness across the board. Then started getting back into running a little bit, and I just always like wanted to tick the box off of doing an ultra. And then in 2021, my cousin messaged me and said, oh, remember Sam Skinner? Obviously someone you've done Dragon's Back 2022 with. He's running that event. And I was like, oh, what? And what was really weird about that is we were staying, me and Hannah, the missus, have always had like a nice special relationship with Wales. We always go there every year, like just nice little holiday hiking, always around Brecon Beacons. And what was really weird is we was there that weekend in September when it was day 5. So we're hiking around Brecon Beacons. I'm just like looking at all these weirdos, like, look at these people. What are they doing? Selection or something. I don't, you know, just like this, like loons just running around. Then then my cousin messaged me. It was like weird. He goes, oh yeah, Sam's doing that race. Do you remember that race that I told you about? And I was like, oh, that's it. And then I just got glued. It sort of ruined our holiday, to be fair, because when you sort of know someone in that event, it can be just so bloody consuming, right? And it's the first time I've ever looked into it. So I'm watching every YouTube video, I'm watching all the edits, you know, I'm just like learning who Helene with whatever her name is, the one who won it in like 80 something. I'm like watching all that, and it, like, my missus is probably thinking, oh God, what the hell? And she just says to me, why don't you enter that? And I goes, oh, I could, you know, I could enter that, can I? And then I spoke to a friend of mine who's a running coach, and he just put me on the straight and narrow and goes, an event like that, he goes, I'm not gonna lie to you, you need time in the legs. He goes, you could enter the 2022, but he goes, I guarantee you, you'd absolutely struggle, you won't enjoy the event, and you just will not have the time in your legs. I actually did that on the recent one as well, but obviously I finished it, which is the most important thing. And I took his advice, and then obviously I did an ultra, the Gower one, which was fantastic, great event. And then I contacted you for like some actual proper training and just a bit of like actual structure. So yeah, the race has been on my mind for 2 years. And then obviously I attended it and completed it and survived it just about this year.
Because it used to be when Shane revived it from the 90s or whenever, or early 90s, it was, then when he revived it, it was every 2 years, wasn't it? So
yeah,
it's a little bit like a poison chalice, the fact that he then added it every single year, because people get inspired and look at it, and then it might be September when they're looking at it, or they might find it on YouTube and before Christmas and go, I'll enter it, which is great. But then they'll enter the next one, which is the following September. And yeah, like you said, when it was a gap of 2 years, it's like, one, I've got 2 years to train for this usually. Yeah.
Mm.
Two, people go, I can't fuck this up, because it's only every 2 years, plus it's obviously not cheap and all that kind of thing. So sometimes I think it's not, it's great from an event kind of point of view, but yeah, we get to watch it or take part. But I think back when it was every 2 years, it was like, right, yeah, I'm going to give myself 2 years. So you definitely did the right thing. 2 years is probably the minimum if you're not already been doing that kind of stuff for years and years.
Yeah, and you think I was basically a beginner again. You know, I've ran for years when I was younger in the Marines and stuff like that, but I haven't consistently ran a few times a week. Like, it was like every week doing a 5K or something, you know, just like just ticking over. So in my eyes, when I look at that, you're a beginner. Like, you may have this general fitness, which is good because you can work from that, but actually when it comes to actual running, you're a beginner, you know. And when I look back at that now, it obviously with hindsight, and what I'd advise to people is actually I probably needed more time. I could have actually probably done with maybe another year or two, a few 50 milers in there, 100 miler in there, you know, just more experience. And I know I finished the event and I get that, but looking back at it now, that's what I would have done differently. Just been fitter, stronger, more resilient with running.
Yeah. There's like you're looking at the point of view of what I could have done better though, which is just natural, isn't it? Whereas you've got like, yeah, like the fact that you entered it and completed it at the first time of asking, you still got to give yourself enough credit for that. And you gave yourself enough time to get through it. Like I say, I've said to the other guys, like Barry and stuff that were doing it this year, if they'd have come to me and it's pie in the sky, it's like, no, you need more. That's usually what I say. It's not unachievable. Mm. You just need more time. But
yeah,
like you knew that you could... Well, you're going to have to commit to it in terms of a few weekends away. You're a personal trainer, so you were like used to being in a gym. You reduced that a little bit, didn't you? Not work-wise, just lifting and changed the way you were lifting and stuff like that, and just gave yourself the best chance. When you entered, I'm always interested, like when you were going through the entry process, was it excitement or did you have that, you know, like buyer's regret when you buy something and you're like, oh fuck, I've spent.
Yeah, no, was it buyer's remorse? No, I was mega excited, yeah. Like as in on, I think they release it like on the 10th of August and I like waited for that like 10 o'clock, 10th of August. And as soon as it was that moment, that clock had went, I just entered it straight away. Cause I already, you think I've been, as you know, well, I don't know it, that for me that race is a bit, and I haven't done loads of events, so I'll learn that over the years, but it's an event for me that I used to think about every day. With every run I used to think about, I know, because obviously you've done it when you've got a lot more experience under you, so it's a different, like you had many more years in your legs, do you know what I mean? So like when you're like that, like the pros or the elites, they can enter it with it 6 months to go, can't they? Because they've just got 20 years of running in their legs, or, you know.
Yeah.
So I sort of built myself up to, you know, like not the year within the race, the year before that. Like first when I started working with you, I just knew that was the goal. Right, get to that event no matter what. Build up slowly this year, and then the last year, just let that event consume you as much as possible. And just take it all in. I think I did about 10 recces now when I look at that, you know, like all that time, all those weekends, which is, that's actually
all those weekends that you spent. Yeah, I was going to say, like the weekends that you spent, because we'll go through the training and go through the race. Because I know how many weekends you spent going up there and stuff like that. And like you live right down at the south, don't you?
Yeah, Portsmouth, basically.
How far is it to get up to the Brecon Beacon, say? Or how long does it take?
Brecon's is like 3.5 hours if you leave at like 3 in the morning. You can do that in a good stint.
Yeah.
Brecon, like, it's a really good place to visit.
So you were doing that, and like, I'll still have people that won't go and wreck a race 45 minutes away. Sorry, I don't have people. I speak to people, and then we end up not working together, maybe, because it's like you need to go and get on the course or something. Or if you can't, why can't you? And we'll make the best out of it. But you'd already you were telling me, I'm going to do this. And if anything, I had to hold you back in terms of recces and needing to go and spend that time. When you're
so
going
they can be like little recces, mini events anyway.
I was going to say, when you're going for those recces, is that... Because again, whether it's a Dragon's Back or whatever, sometimes it's the recces that I enjoy way more, kind of thing, in terms of just enjoyment. Obviously, you enjoy Dragon's Back because of the whole thing, but talk to me about the recces. Would you say it was a benefit? Would you wish you'd done less, more? How'd it go?
Massive benefit, especially knowing the better lines, because I went like 10 times. What I got to do, which is really fortunate, is like I got to take the routes that were the GPX they give you, and then I could visit it another time and do like the lines that you gave me, or like when I looked at, say, Simon Roberts or James Noble's, Chris Coates lines, and I looked at those, like, oh, so that was really actually important to do sort of both lines, which always, for me, when it comes to something like an event or anything, I think, you know, being as best prepared as you possibly can and leaving no stone unturned is actually vital. So I know some people won't recce that event, as in some people just actually choose not to, and then some people can't, you know, a lot of, let's say, foreign runners. And I get that. That's completely different, to be fair. But I think, you know, if you're within 5 or 6 hours, I think you know, go and do it. It's a great couple of days out, and it's really good training. Like we used to do, what's it, Friday, get there Thursday night, do Friday, Saturday, Sunday, drive home Sunday, you know, make sure you go with people so you can sort of just do point to point, because out and backs are just annoying trying to do the recces, you know. But yeah, and that's actually what I was going to say, like one of the bits I'll probably miss about this event is, you know, going out on these weekends with other runners and stuff like that, because it's just like, it's quite rare terrain for me, you know. I just don't have that terrain. Like,
plus you got to see it in all different kind of in all different weather conditions as well, didn't you?
Mm. But it taught me about the key thing about the recces was, didn't just teach me like the surrounding my ground, of the ground around you, of where to go, but it taught me how to use certain bits of kit as well, like the watch. You know, like I remember when I went up, was it the Glidders, and I went up that mad face, like I didn't follow I didn't go to the left,
the
I
mad was
scrambling in a storm, like, and I'm just looking at people like, and you got all these people in like these special approach shoes and rope, and you see me with a pair of hockers and a bloody Solomon vest. Do you know what I mean? And that's when I realized, you know, I got to the top, got the kit on that I needed, and I was like, just looked at my watch and goes, that shows I'm on the path, but I'm actually too far zoomed out. So I needed to zoom in. And when I zoomed in, you know, I'm miles to the right. So just like little things like that a recce can do, you know. And then you bring
remember
the
after that
and have a look at,
I remember after that run with you, and I remember I sent you that screenshot of just your line. I was like, interesting line there, mate.
I lost so much time, honestly. But what was brilliant, I got to the top of the Glidders that day, and it was like clag, and then I just see this guy, he was like in a yellow Innovate jacket, just hopping the rocks, looking like an absolute pro. And he just looked at me and stopped. He goes, are you right, mate? And I goes, yeah, I'm just trying to get to, is it Glidder 4? The checkpoint
Power,
before you go into Penny Fowler, until you get to the Penny Pass. He goes, yeah, mate, don't go over the rocks, just handrail them. And then when he said that, like even bumping into him, and then I sort of followed him-ish. And I was like, oh yeah, never, because if you look, if you look at the GPX, and even if you're zoomed in, sometimes it will have you going over those sort of like false summits or whatever, wouldn't it? And actually that ground is fucking shit.
You've got to,
the recces were good.
Having the GPX and everything is great, and it's essential to run that event now in the way that it's ran. But at the same time, like you say, going over the ground and having the line there, but also having your head up, and it's not common sense. It's a little bit more than common sense. But like you say, the big rock formation is sticking out of the Glidders and stuff. Like, you've got to remember that GPX file is what Shane and his team has set up as like the best route as a runner. It might not be the shortest or whatever, but yeah, it's the one that makes sense the most. So if you're ever climbing over something that you think you probably shouldn't be climbing over,
that's unrunnable. Hang on a minute, which I did.
Yeah, should I be 10 meters to the left where it looks a little bit more runnable, but it's not exactly on my line of the watch?
Yeah. I definitely learned a lesson that day. So yeah, that just like that, even to doing that and having that glitch and losing all that time trying to blink in scramble, but then it, you know, I got to the top and I was like, right, use your watch a bit better, you know. And obviously that's when I got the map out as well, and I was looking at, like, you know, looking at like the icons, you know, the rocks as they draw them on, and then you see the path to the left. So you're like, oh yeah, don't go over it. Yeah, like things like that. So yeah, for me, I think, but I think as well, when you come into the event, you just know what's coming up. And some people don't like that, but I think that's good. You know, if I know there's a honking hill coming, you know, I'm eating and getting some caffeine on board straight away, because I know that this is just shit climb. So, you know, those sorts of things as well. Streams,
everyone wants Dragon's Back a little bit different, because everyone wants, some people want a slightly different experience. I get it, like you say, if they want to go map, compass, not seen 90% of the route and just have a journey, that's brilliant. But there's lots of people out there that might be knowing that they're going to either be chasing cutoffs, or they just need to get through it the best way they can, and all that kind of thing. So yeah, I get both sides. When you're, like you say, when you were doing the recces and you were doing races along the way, were you building up confidence in your own head that you were going to be capable of doing it? Because, like, we didn't really mention the fact, I never mentioned the fact that, like, are you confident of doing the race? Because I can just see it in people usually, whether they're naive or not. It's like, I'm not going to ask them that question before they do it. But were you feeling confident, or with the closer you got, were you feeling less confident? How was it going?
Certain things grew my confidence. Like, I was quite confident, but then sometimes when you do a recce, you're like, oh my God, but, you know, you do get a bit of doubt. You know, I remember the first time I ever did a recce, the first time I went to Snowdon, I went with my mate, who's quite a good runner. And I just did us like the horseshoe with a bit of extra. And it's like 12 miles. And he's like, oh, we're only going to do 12 miles. I was like, yeah, be 12. And that took us like 5-6 hours. And that was a big learning curve. It was amazing. I had amazing weather. I got the best views. But that was like, when I finished that day, I was like, I'm going to be here. I was like, fucking hell, actually, this is real. This is going to be really tough. Like, you know, you think 12 miles, oh, that should take you a couple hours, you know, a bit of elevation. And I was right. Oh my God. But there was confidence things going on. I did some of those raw recces, which I think, you know, are absolutely fantastic, actually, and good value for money. And I felt like I was quite fit in those and strong in those. So that does sort of like boost your confidence a little bit. Not that I'm competitive with people, but you just, I thought, you know, and then you speak to other people and you see how long they've been training and stuff like that. And I just thought, actually, yeah, I'm doing all right, actually. And then I could feel the fitness in the hills as well. That's coming. Like, I wasn't like, I'm not a fast runner or anything, but I just felt like I could just, like, any uphill, I just felt like a power march, like those sorts of things, you know, where you're just smashing hills and you're not getting out of breath. And I was just like, and then smashing the descents and stuff like that. That's when I sort of like started to get the confidence of, actually, yeah, you can do this as long as you keep moving. I think that's the key point in this race. It doesn't always matter whether you're moving at 1 mile an hour or like 6 or 7, like, you just fucking move at whatever you can and don't stop, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I did get confident as it came along, but then I always had a massive respect for the race. You know, when you go for a goal like the Dragon's Back, with my running history, I know that there is a chance, and I believe you do have to accept that you might not finish this race. There's like a high chance of you not finishing this race, to be fair.
Did you have, like, going into it, did you start to worry about anything in particular?
as in on the
keep going. That's my camera.
Yeah. Now, yeah, is that on the event or before?
No, like say in the weeks leading up to it, like apart from I know you had some shins grumbling, but just getting a bit closer to the event, did you start to worry about anything?
Only the shin thing. I just thought I've had 2 years of solid training, no niggles, nothing. Looked after myself, did good load management, you know, rested, recovered, blah, blah, blah. And then obviously this shin thing came along, which obviously just made me sort of not bed bound, but there was no running roughly about 10 days before the event, which isn't the best because that event's such a steep incline then of a spike, isn't it? So like that first day, my body's going, what is this? You haven't ran for 10 days, you know? And then that first day is like...
It's hard, wasn't it? It's over. Like, because I remember when you were speaking to me, it was like, and I'm going, just don't run, mate. But I know, at the same time, it's hard to say to someone before, like 10 days out,
you don't want to decondition, do you?
At all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. But you're gonna recondition yourself pretty quickly on day one, I was thinking. Yeah. Like, in all honesty, like, because it's a long, slow climb on day one, isn't it? You consistently, people forget how much you're actually climbing for a long period of time. So you're not really, you haven't got any long downhills for a while. So it's just like, right, let's get you to that point fully rested at that kind of, rather than risking too much. Yeah.
I think as well.
Yeah, it was good, mate.
I was going to say, like,
no, go on.
Tapering probably has to be viewed differently with that sort of stuff. I don't know, with Dragon's Back, it's not like a single event, guns blazing, let's go. It's actually, you know, when you're on day one, you probably know you've got to think about day six and stuff like that, haven't you? So actually, it's, yeah, that probably did, like, obviously resting, it probably did do me actually what I needed, because I know in the last few blocks of last few months of training before the Dragon's Back, I had like recces that were a bit close to each other, and you know, and that wasn't always, it wasn't optimal, should we say. You know, I had like certain things that were just a bit too close to my liking, because the thing about the recces as well, if you're doing like say three back to backs of roughly, you know, 20 milers, that's like a little mini event, isn't it, in a way?
Yeah. I think you got the most out of your training that you could without pushing it too far. And like you say, that showed in just towards the end, you got a little bit of tendonitis essentially, but it wasn't too much. So, I think you did the best that you could with the training, mate. Going into it, like when you stood in Conwy Castle, like I've been there twice now, like, what time does it start? Six now? Seven? Something like that.
Six
in the morning
now,
on the Monday. Yeah. So when you're standing there on that start line and you've got like the old boys singing the Welsh choir, like, how were you feeling then? Were you ready to go, or was you twitching a little bit?
I just wanted to get on with it, to be fair. I felt that in the week before, like, and the weeks prior, actually, I was just like, oh, come on, get it. You know, just like, let's just go. And it's not until, it's nice. It's like a nice moment that you can take in, but it's quite blurred just because I think you actually feel like you're actually in the event when you're moving. And then when you get to Lyn Ogwen, you're like, and the heat was obviously beating down there, and it's in that valley. Like, it's just always seems to be humid, and you just sit down for 2 minutes and you just see like people in bits, people smashing it, people eating, people got their feet out. Like, it's like quite a busy pit stop, isn't it? 'Cause there's so many people still in the event. So it's just like, and I'm just like, I've just got to get out of here because it's just too much. And actually, I should have probably stayed there a little bit longer and just like chilled out a little bit and ate some more food, because before you know it, you know, you're climbing up Triffin, which is quite, it was just hard that day. You know?
You're thinking, well, everyone will have seen it probably that's remotely interested in this podcast, but it was hot, wasn't it? So... I've climbed up Trivan in the heat, and it's just those boulders that are usually like cold to touch are all of a sudden the heat's bouncing off them, and then you know you've got to drop down and go back up into the glitters, and all of a sudden you've got like hours of feeling it. There's no shade, maybe a little bit of shade when you go up to the glitters on that steep, but then it's fucking steep as hell and you're clambering around and you're thinking I need to eat, but all of a sudden you're at that point where your stomach's thinking I don't want to eat now. So it's like, and then you're thinking, like you said, that's when you know you're in the event and you're only in halfway through day one or something.
It's like, sorry, Gary, my talk?
Yeah.
Can you? Yeah, good? Got you. Sorry, something was up with my
thingy
then.
Yeah. How did day go one overall then? And can I?
There you go, got you.
Got me?
Yeah, got you. Sorry.
It's all right. Go on, day one. How did, like, some day one up for me?
What the fuck have I got myself into? Wicked day, though, like, as in, got to Llangollen within, like, I always wanted to get there around the 5-6 hour mark, you know, because I know that the back end of that day, past then, is just a slow going ground. So got there before I got even to the checkpoint. I jumped in Llangollen, sat there for a couple of minutes, just thought, why not?
In Llangollen?
Yeah.
How'd you get in there?
You know, like the lay-by that's on the right?
Yeah. What, you got over there and went
in? Yeah, just got over there, sat in there, and then went to the checkpoint. Sorted my life out. I just thought it was so hot, you know, you're on that tarmac road, that road that just doesn't end until you hit the that checkpoint. And I just got in there, then sorted myself out.
You're not on holiday, mate.
But I got to like that checkpoint with like well under time, if you, do you know what I mean? So I was just like, I'm just gonna cruise this. And then
it's absolutely freezing in that lake as well. I bet that was a nice shot.
And then got onto Triffin and I was like, I just started feeling sensations I've never felt before while being out of like moving. I just felt hot, quite nauseous, stopped every few minutes, you know, like a few steps, take a breather, sit in the shade, because there's still bits of shade of rocks. It would have been like 10:30 while I'm climbing Triffin, so certain bits you can still hide. Then I just saw my mate who I did some recces with come out of nowhere, and I just jumped on with him and just stayed with him, and he was sort of feeling the same way. And then actually when I got into camp on day one, I spoke to loads of people and they're like, we was all dying, people were vomiting a lot, because you think you've just done that checkpoint, and the biggest issue with that is like obviously loads of people scoff tons of food. So, and then they're climbing Triffin, which probably, I'd say, would you say that's the worst climb of that day? Yeah, probably, isn't it? Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I've never had both times I've done Dragon's Back, I've felt awful going up it. I don't know what it is. And I've been done other races, other days on Triffin, and absolutely flown up it the same way. I say flown up it, but felt great on it and felt strong. And twice now, I felt felt horrible by the time I got to the top, but yeah, it's
probably the fact as well, you've done like 20 miles as well, haven't you? That's the sometimes I forget, like you almost forget that when you go and recce Triffin, most times you park at the bottom and that's your fresh legs going
the
up
main,
actually on drag.
The main thing is the main issue is, I think for most of it, is that you forget, well, some people forget that they've just come off Penrhyl Wen, which is like over 1,000 meters down to the lake, and that's the first time you've done a long sustained downhill, and it is one of the longest downhills, and it's runnable. And then you hit the road, which is another, half a mile of running. And then you, some people have a full on meal and then they go, right, off we go, crack on up Triffin. It's like, that's when most people would be ending their day if it was a run.
And it's unfortunate. I knew a lot of people that didn't make that day because of that. Like at that point, like Triffin was like the last straw for them, you know.
Yeah, I mean, in reality, mate, Triffin on day one cannot be your last straw at the dragon's back. Otherwise, yeah, you needed more time to train. That's the bottom line, really. How did recovery go? Because I know in the build up, you'd done the 3-day silver event, was it? What do they call it?
Yeah, that's a fantastic event, the Great Lakeland 3-day.
Yeah.
Really good.
The Great Lakelands. Yeah. I remember we talked about that just to get used to doing your admin stuff like that. Very similar in terms of getting up and going out and running the mountains. So could you relax on day one? Did you sleep fine in the night? How was it? How did that bit go?
Camp admin, not too bad for like obviously been in the military, stuff like that. So like all that stuff came relatively quite easy, you know, just sort yourself out, sort your kit out, and then obviously feet up and eat and stuff like that. But there was and everyone felt this like on day one, where we just came in and it was like we was all like we were like zombies, like there was like death stares going, like we were all just fried, do you know what I mean? Like it was like we all came in and we were just like, what, you know, like we're just like all zombies. And then I remember Barry coming in at like 10 to 10 and he just comes into the tent and I'm laying down and he's like, do you know what I mean? Like he's just seen someone get shot. You know, we were all like that when we first got in there, because we were just like, I think there was like the heat just made everything so difficult that day, you know, and it was just like, we were all just like, I think in shock. And I think most people in the camp could say that about day one. I think, yeah, that, because I'd say out of all the days, that's probably the worst day for it to be really hot, because of just the ground, as you know, it's like bouncing off the stones and stuff like that. And then typical me, just took some painkillers that had caffeine in, so I was just up all night just like looking at the top of the tent, buzzing my tits off, like my legs and feet are going, what have you just done? I had a mare the first night, to be fair. Just wired.
It's funny, everyone that's ever gone into this that I speak to is like, you can plan as much as you want and then you'll go and make a dick move like that. I mean, it's not a dick, you know what I mean? It's just like a small mistake, yeah. Say. And yeah. Like, I'm kind of the opposite. Like, if you ever speak to Si, he's just like, he's baffled about how I get to the end, not the running part, just like the admin side of things, because I basically wander in the tent, fall asleep, wake up, my shit's everywhere. When you have to go and check your bag in, I don't know if you heard this story, it's like every day I'd forgotten something in the tent and he'd have to give it to me or I'd be back. Like one day I forgot my day bag. I was like checking out or, you know, like giving my bag in, and it was like, they were like, Si was like, you're missing something, because he comes in. I was like, what are you on about? It's like, didn't even have my actual running back. I was like trying to leave it out. Oh, it's just every single day there was something that like I couldn't find something. It was just I was unorganized, but then I had my set routine, which I'd done, which anyone who succeeds in finishing, like you'll know, I bet you will have had your set routine and then everything else might have been a bit chaotic.
Yeah.
So as long as you're people overanalyze so much about every little thing that they're packing and all this kind of stuff. And in reality, as long as you get your food down, you set your bed up and lie down, even if you can't sleep because your mind is running, even if you lie down and let your legs rest, that is kind of your routine, right?
Yeah, and I actually woke up on day two, and I quite like day two. I know that's quite a hard day and stuff, which it is, but I recce'd the whole day. I just knew what was there. I knew, and there was a massive breeze, so it's still really hot. Actually, there was a massive breeze, which did help. But I woke up and I didn't wake up, because obviously I didn't go to sleep. But when I first started moving in the morning, because you all know, right, there's people getting up at 3 o'clock, torches around, banging around, like, and I'm just thinking in my head, are your feet that bad that you have to wake up at 3? Why are you getting up? I just didn't get it. But when I suppose packed my stuff away and walked around the camp, I was like, I feel good, you know, I feel all right. For someone who has not slept a wink, I felt all right, good to go, to be fair. Fortunately.
Day two was pretty was all right, wasn't it? You made good progress through day two, which is when you go through the Rhinogs and stuff. It was very hot, but arguably, like you with your background and everything, I was confident that you'd manage the heat okay. It's when it becomes, if there was a storm and everything up there, it's like that eats into people's time. And I'm not going to say I was following the tracker 10 hours a day, but every time I checked in, it's like, James making good progress. It was never, it just seemed like you had a good solid day, if I'm honest. Is that how it was? Obviously, you go in 70 odd K, whatever it is, but it seemed pretty solid.
Yeah, and it felt, what was quite good about that day is the only thing that hurt a little bit was like my feet, just like certain blisters developing, but I didn't have the issue with my knee. The knee sort of thing crept in on day three and then just got progressively worse. So I was still just really enjoying it, you know, like just gliding through all the things. And I knew, and it's always nice, like we said.
Normally being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
About the recce earlier, being on that familiar ground, that's like, I think that's a massive advantage. Oh, this is coming, do this, do that, you know, and then taking the line, is it to Diffwis, that one? That just, is that how you say it? Diffwis, yeah.
Yeah, that Diffwis, yeah.
I think that's probably like when I think, because I only really took shortcuts on what, day two and three. But that's like the best, that for me, that's the arguably the one you noticed the most on, because there were people running much better.
Because you can see people on that shit ground up to the left usually. Yeah. And you're like,
ah. And they're looking at you like.
And then they look at you and they realize he's going into a bog. There, really.
It's a good one, that one. That's the one. Yeah, and it just gives you it's like a little morale booster.
You see them there and then you have to go, fuck me, I'm going to have to put my foot down here, because if I come up there, because you can watch each other, if I come up there behind them, then they have the last laugh, don't they? It's like, not that you want, it's not that competitive in that way, but I remember seeing someone and going, I'm going to have to get there for my own, like, just so I don't look like a dick now, basically.
And then you've got quite a nice descent off that. Like, that's a mega view, isn't it? Because, like, if you turn around, you're at Rhinogs, and you've got, like, to the right, you've got the beaches and stuff, and then you've got the wood block that you're sort of heading towards now, and that descent's all really nice. And then you just got the typical, which was like a part of every day really, just the slog back to camp, the like low flat ground that's like, oh, I should be smashing this but I don't want to, and then you don't, and then you nearly come in at like nearly 10 o'clock. That sort of ground. But day two's good. I like day two.
So when the knee started to play up on day three and day four,
it just felt like classic, bit of swelling around to the side of the knee, just like overuse. Obviously, on certain parts of day two, I just got too carried away with those descents, really, and just had too much fun. Obviously, that combined with, I feel like sometimes when you're in an event like that, you do a lot of movement in a real shortened range of motion. Like, you never really flex and extend the knee properly. Do you know what I mean? It's just like a little movement like that, instead of like going through the full range of motion at times. And yeah, so sometimes throughout the rest of the event, it actually felt better to run at a faster pace than a little shuffle, if that makes sense. Because it was like you was actually just getting the joint moving properly. So just a bit of swelling, just a bit of overuse.
When you get when you get to day four and there's quite a lot more running kind of thing, it almost feels like a relief, doesn't it, where it's kind of shouldn't feel like a relief that you have to run now, but actually it is a bit of a relief. Like in those first three days, let's say, what was the biggest surprises you had, if anything? What surprised you more about the event?
How much fluid I've always been a big water drinker, so I was always carrying 3 litres, but actually how much I was getting through, well over 10 litres a day. Like easy, yeah. Stopping in streams. Jesus. Still, yeah. That's, do you know what I mean? Yeah. That's like a lot of fluid. And I am one of those people that I'm not a really, salty sweater, but I do generally feel like I generally drink a lot of water a day anyway. So getting through that was like fucking hell. But I noticed it if I stopped, if that made sense. Like I'd have like a moment where I'd just forget to keep that routine going. I would definitely feel that straight away. And to sort of feel that, obviously, by day three, you're in a massive calorie deficit that you just can't claw back of, like, if you miss the timings of your gels and stuff like that. I had, like, my alarm watch going off every 30 minutes where I'd eat, like, a Cliff Blocks and just easy carbs. But, like, if I sometimes just miss that for whatever reason, I could almost feel the hunger pangs straight away. It was like, fucking hell, you are in a deficit right now. Like, so that's quite a rare fit. That's a rare feeling for me to feel that, like, oh, you're in a deficit. So yeah, but no real big, I suppose, I thought I'd have more time in camp, those sorts of things. Time just runs away from you. Once you get to those 40 milers from day three onwards, really, and it's like 40 and above, the time is just gone. Like the first night on day one, I was quite sociable with people. I was just speaking to them, you know, having nice chats with like people I knew from the raw recce's. And then as the week went on, I just got more selfish and more efficient and just remembered that event, I'm here for this event, and I haven't got time to faff, you know, doing everything as quick as possible, like eating whilst looking at Dragon Mail. Yeah, cheers. You know, just like trying to just get everything refined and just trying to lie down as much as possible, essentially.
Did you get lots of Dragon Mail?
Yeah. I got lots of abuse, yeah.
That would have been rubbish if you said, no, nobody sent me anything.
No, nobody sent it.
It's like, I sent you at least two or three, maybe, so he's going to say yes.
Yeah, that counts.
It's funny, though, as the event goes on, you start reading it, and it's like you lose track of days, or it feels like a lot longer since you spoke to that person or something, and you're like, and it might be one sentence, and you're like, oh my god, thank you, kind of thing. And it's like,
I was thinking, you just get more vulnerable you're just in the DB bubble, aren't you? And you're just becoming more and
it's
more
only,
fatigued.
It's only at that point, really. That's the only point, apart from, like, because I never used to have my phone signal on and stuff, really, when I'm on the day. So when you read the Dragon Mail stuff, that's like the first time it reminds you that, oh yeah, there's people out there that might be watching or following how you go in, kind of thing. And you kind of need that, but it's a good boost, because otherwise you're spending the days just, you can really question, like, basically why am I still going, or any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
if that was going to creep in, you've got a nightly reminder, haven't you? Actually, no chance, mate, carry on, that kind of thing.
Yeah It was quite nice. Like, I remember, so I, because they, I don't know if they did this, did you have Wi-Fi when you was there? We had Wi-Fi and stuff, like, so
I know it's literally world. Oh, it's literally like a holiday camp now, mate. It's not even.
It's not even a hard session. Yeah. So like,
phone, they got, what have they got? Helpful. The chargers, the drying room, Wi-Fi. Yeah. Now, I saw that you had smoothies on like day three or something. We had one on the last night. Yeah. Basically, like an all-inclusive holiday now.
Basically like an all very expensive hiking trip. No, but that was quite helpful, like getting certain messages off the missus, like telling me like the messages she'd be receiving from the like the charity I raised money for, and I was like, fucking, you know, like yeah. the moment you're like, oh my God, that's bloody hell, that's amazing. Like, where I'd never usually be like that, but where, like, so as you get on through the week, you're just more vulnerable, like, until you get that day six where you're just like, I was just, the swagger was back on day six. Like, you know what I mean? I'm forgetting shit in my tent. I'm just like, yeah, fuck it, I don't need that. I'm going home, you know? Like, especially after that day five. God, yeah. So, yeah, that's...
Let's talk about day five then, because, yeah, otherwise we'll be here all day. But day four again,
yeah.
pretty solid day. I wasn't worrying at all.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, dragged a little bit on those road sections, you know, my knee was like,
yeah.
I was resorting to the hike slash shuffle. So those last sections, which are actually really nice when you've got the sun, because you've got all these mad views like through these valleys, well, the Elam Valley, obviously. And then, yeah, it took, felt like forever to get back to camp. But that is the day where I got in daylight again, which was nice. That's quite a nice feeling, just that, like, oh, God, it's still daylight. You know, you can go in the stream without your head torch and stuff like that. That was quite nice. So, yeah.
I remember saying to you and Barry and that beforehand about the long run into camp on tarmac, and then seeing you go down it, I thought, is he all right? Or is he just chilling? Or is he just knackered kind of thing? But I was like, I hope he's chilling and taking on my, or just remembered the fact that it's a long downhill, because it is, that's messed up a lot of people's races, mine included, the first time, to be honest.
Yeah.
Do you think that played into the knee playing up?
No, because the knee was hurting by then already. So it was like the knee thing is like, I look at it as like a blessing and a curse, because the blessing is it lowers your intensity regardless, because when it hurts, you just have to slow down. Whereas if you didn't have that issue, you know, would I have pushed a lot harder? Would I have, you know, been running a lot more, and like, could I have not finished the race? Because I could have just went too hard too soon. So like, you know, I take the positive from the knee, it slowed me down. And the downhills, that's a fast section, that, but I couldn't push the downhills most of the time. My quickest times were flats and uphills. That's where I had to make time up, just like really march uphills. I was overtaking people uphill, and then as soon as we got to the top, they were just like just gazelling down, and I was just like hobbling like some creature just coming down off the hills. Yeah,
you're basically like
annoying
a big old van with a speed limit to run.
Yeah,
on the motorway.
I was probably like sapping the morale out of people on these uphills, and they're like, oh God, why does he find that so easy? And then they just see me on the downhill, just laugh, you know, take the morale back that I've sapped off them. Do you know what I mean? Like, look at him. Yeah. So I knew about that. There's moments of the days where you know you are in within that cutoff, right? So when as soon as I ever felt that, I knew not to get complacent or take the piss, but I knew you're finishing this day, so there's no stress now. It's just literally preserve yourself for the next day, because I feel like for me, my two biggest days that I was always like had a worry about was day three and day five. Just because of the length and the elevation and the ground, like they've always been quite the two. No, day three was the hurdle in the 5 day event, wasn't it? That was always the one. And then now, the recent additions, it's day three and five. Day five is the one, right? But yeah, day five, what a day! To experience the Brecon Beacons in that heat was obviously not the best at times, but the views that you got, you know, like were phenomenal to see that sort of ground like that. The first day where I actually had to chase a bit of, got worried about timings, and the first day is where I had to chase cutoffs, something I've never experienced before. So that was actually quite fun, you know, looking at the map, looking at recommended time. I always wanted to get in the recommended, not near the cutoff, if that makes sense, because they do it now. Because I think if you do that, then you're always safe for the 10 o'clock time. Obviously, this event had, actually another thing that this event had, it was obviously the heat allowances. So on certain, from day two, you could come in like, say 10:29 and you wouldn't be dropped. So they had.
You had what you have up to 30 minutes. Grace, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. 30 minutes.
Again, so just like making it easy for everyone.
Yeah. What was quite smart about that, though, was as in you still had to come in before the cutoff. So say if the cutoff was 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
You had to come in, say, 5 to 2, and then you could have half an hour. You didn't have to leave the checkpoint straight away. Does that make sense? If someone came in at 2:05, they didn't have 25 minutes. They were pulled then.
No.
That made sense. That was like the,
yeah.
I suppose.
You still got to make the cutoff. Otherwise, you're not changing a cutoff then, or you've got a break essentially. It's just safety and that kind of thing.
Yeah. And I probably should have, on day five, probably should have took more time at the checkpoints, but I still personally wanted to come in before the 10 o'clock. You know, that was my.
You definitely shouldn't have took more time because.
I got in at like 8 minutes too, so.
So I sat there watching with 5 minutes to spare, and then you wandered over. So you definitely didn't waste any time.
Yeah. But day five, what was cool, like I was saying about the cutoffs, like I was worried about, oh, I'm going to miss this, you know, the first support point. And it was just like something had taken over me. I just put my headphones in, put some bangers on, all pain just left, and I just smashed everything, like overtaking people yet again, smashed the uphills, and I'd get in right to the support point, the first water one. No, it's the main support point, because it's like halfway, isn't it? Yeah, you think it's that road there, but it's not. You've got one more climb, then it's the road. So that confused everyone as well, because we all ran to the bottom thinking, yeah, support point's here. And we're like, oh shit, we've got a climb and then a descent, and it's the next road. And then I got in, and I was like, oh, you've got an hour till the cutoff. I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. So I like pushed. But again, like I say, like me doing that got me in before the 10 o'clock cutoff, right? So it's still a win. 5 minutes, no faff, refill water, dip your hat, get moving straight away again. And then I thought, I was going to miss the penny pass cutoff, but then got into that within 45 minutes. Spare, but that was quite fun. That was yet again, like, it was just like little adrenaline rushes that were just quite fun. I've never ever experienced that. And then obviously, just made that slog off up Story Arms. No, it is the Story Arms pass, not Penny Pass. It was Story Arms, sorry. Story Arms. Going up to Penny Fan, and then that descent is that's the one where I probably lost about 3 hours on that descent off Penny Fan. I was just like, mate, it was just like I'd have been safer coming down in a wheelchair on that. Like, that was just like making all sorts.
That's
of
what I was like last year. Halfway through day five, that's when I picked up the shin injury, and every step was like couldn't really lift that foot off the ground. It was like shuffling up, and then like you say, as soon as you go off Penavan and it's up and down, it's like that's the worst place not to be able to lift your leg properly. And I'd gone from being wherever I was to all of a sudden, I don't know if I'm going to get in it because it's going dark and stuff. And I knew what was to come down. You go alongside the little waterfalls and river, but it's through through the woods, and it's easy. You can go off track there, can't you? And I saw lots of people around that point, and I think just hoping that people make it down without taking a wrong turn down there, because you can easily do it.
Mm. Yeah. And then that's when I sort of got this the third adrenaline rush. Was like, it was just the thing that I lost so much time on that day was just the descents. Like, and they're quite, some of them are quite harsh. Obviously, before the wood block, you've got that descent, haven't you? And then you go into the flat field for a bit, and then you get to the waterfalls. And I got to the waterfalls, looking at my time, I was like, right, I've got to really dig deep here. I had to overtake the mateys I was with. Like, we just stuck together for a little bit. I was like, yeah, I'm just going now. And I just sort of just turned into some monkey down that bloody river and just got on that road and then just started 8 minute miling. Like, there was nothing to it. Just thinking, God, no pain. Got in, then like all the pain's back as soon as I know I'm within the cutoff. Like, oh, thank God for that. So yeah, that's a long old day, that, but a good day, to be fair.
As soon as you finished that and you knew you'd made the cutoff and everything, were you And you start feeling a bit painful. Did you allow yourself to think, right, it's doable now, I'm probably going to be okay? Or was it like, oh shit, I've just nearly missed a cutoff?
No, I think you can really, I don't know if anyone's not made day six. It's still 40 miles. I know it's.
I think they have, yeah. I think they've been
probably
crossed
has
off
been
on day
like
six.
Someone who's probably had a real bad injury and it's literally.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Yeah. But I did feel like an air of confidence after getting in that day. And I think you could see that the relief in all the people that are still there. Like the most eeriest thing about day five was obviously us, like back of the pack, mid pack runners were the only people at the 6 o'clock start. So like, there's like 10 of us and you're like that. We're all silent. We're all nervous. And we're like, wow, this is the only day where you feel like, God, we're the survivors, you know? Because obviously the faster people, you know, they're strolling out at seven, aren't they, you know? So, like, that was quite a weird start on day five. There was only, like, a few of us, and we were all, like, looking dead. But when we got in that night and you saw people that are eating, you know, morale was high, but you definitely saw some people that were absolutely broken from that day. Like the way that they were just like looking at their food, you sort of see people, don't you, over the week just become like people are losing pounds per day off. Yeah. Like if you've got someone who's naturally slim, like that person can go from like slim to looking like really skinny at the end of like day five, and you're just seeing them eat and they're like just looking at their food like, you know, and you're like, fucking hell. But yeah, there was definitely a good feeling about coming in on day five, because I just knew, oh, you can walk, you can power hike tomorrow. I don't care what time I finish. I know you can just get that day done. And there were sections like on day six where I jogged for quite a while, had good fun. And then as soon as I start getting into that,
it's strange, isn't it? Because you go in and out of, sorry, mate. It's strange because you go... The start of the day is pretty similar to all the other days. You know, like I said, hopefully you get a sunrise or whatever when you go towards the top and you start descending. It's not a massive hill, but hike up and run down. And then all of a sudden you're going in and out of villages or towns. And I remember going through a bloody park run and stuff. And you're like, what? Yeah. It's like you're going in and out
really
of civilization
refreshing.
All of a sudden.
Yeah, it's like, it's actually really, the new scenery is actually really refreshing, isn't it? People are like, you sort of, it's like the perfect taper into normal life again a little bit, because you see people and you see like just people in shops. You're like, oh my God, what's that? Oh, that's that thing, a co-op. You know, like you do these things that you've forgotten. Like, because you're like, you've just done this long, long week of no sleep. And then you're like, oh my God, I forgot about those shops, you know? And yeah it's quite a nice way.
Or
back into...
someone will stop you and go, God, where have you all come from? And you're like, I can't be asked explaining. Conway Castle.
Conway Castle. But yeah, day six is actually quite a nice ending, because it's funny how the mind works, right? As soon as I knew I was like within a mile of that castle, you know, my body just started going, this is it, mate. Everything started seizing, and it was just like, it is quite funny. And I just hobbled in over the line. But it was, yeah. It's a nice way to end, actually, in the Cardiff Castle. It's good.
So did you have any extra pressure on finishing this year?
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Oh, yeah, I nearly forgot, like, probably the moment there, didn't I? Yeah, no, I suppose, yeah, I can't, yeah, I don't think I'd, Hannah would be my fiance now if I had to pull out or something, you know. I think we'd have to wait for the holiday we're going on next week. Did plan this Dragons back, but I didn't make it. Yeah, that was a little bit of
James
a
finished, ran over the line and went straight onto one knee and proposed, didn't he? Arguably, that's more pressure on Hannah than it is on you, I think. Like, what girl's going to say no?
I know. I'm just such an unselfish guy. I still made Dragons back about her, you know? So that's the most important thing. So yeah, that was a bit of a natural pressure.
Hang on.
Gary?
Go on, carry on.
Have you, If your camera drops.
Bluetooth to my phone then. Yeah, it's my phone. I don't even know where my phone is.
You're blind and that. Yeah, so that was a bit of a pressure. But to be fair, like, all those things, like the charity, you know, all the external pressures you can get into your head, like your friends, you know, not letting people down, the charity, like carrying the ring, the proposal. They actually, you just learn to block that out and you just realize it's actually just, you just got to do what you got to do to get to the end. You know, there wasn't moments where I'm thinking, oh my God, I've got to carry this ring. I have to finish for this ring.
Where did you carry the ring? That's all the people have asked me, and I said, I'll ask him when I speak to him on the podcast, but like, where did you carry the engagement ring?
The engagement ring, I carried it. I had it in my main drop bag with my first aid kit. Then on the last day, I put it in my halfway bag, drop point bag, sorry, small one, and then just
picked it up. So you had to remember to get it at halfway? Oh, fucking
yeah, yeah, that stuff is easy, though, to be fair. like I said, because and people said this to me, like, because I knew a few people that were working it and stuff like that, oh, I can't believe how good you look, like wow, you look all right, you know, you don't look. And I just put that down to like literally where this knee, you know, just pulled the intensity from. Obviously there were elements of day five where I was just like, you know, climbing up a hill and just, what the fuck is going on here? But like, because that knee just stopped me pushing as hard as I probably would have liked to, which could have been at my detriment, like I've said already, like that, you know, my cognitive functions and stuff like that were fine. So when I was getting into camp, you know, I was smiley, I was chatting to people, I was like, how you doing, you know. And that's just because the knee just slowed me down so much that actually, you know, my heart rate, if I look at my heart rates across the day, they were working at a much lower rate than most people, you know. So like I say, blessing and a curse. So yeah,
what was it like, like you say, that running, because I've done it twice now and still haven't run into that castle. So
sorry, mate.
First year, obviously, just when it was 5 days, it just finished in a random field in an old school, didn't it, outside of Cardiff. And then last year, obviously, we couldn't use the castle because of the bloody queen. So, like, so what was it like running? How's it work? You literally run straight into the middle of the castle and that's the finish line, or do you finish before the castle? Because I'm interested.
It's in the castle, actually. It's quite a magnificent finish, as in, like, it's like, do you know what, you're going through this lovely park, bear in mind it's sunny, there's loads of people, you know, clapping you on, blah blah, and then you go through that like big sort of door, obviously that's open, and then you like enter like what seems like a mini festival. Like you're running towards the finish line, and then there's a stage, there's a photo bit, there's a bit you sort your kit out, there's like burger vans, stuff like that. And it's like I get in there and I am so done, I'm just like in my head, turn that music down, give me my trophy, I want to go home. But then you have to wait, obviously, for the presentation. Yeah, it was like that. There was so many people there. Obviously, people congratulating you, and I was just a bit spaced out, because I was just like, when I got in, finished that line, obviously got on the knee, and then after that, it was like, I just need to grab my stuff, give myself a baby wipe wash, get changed. I just need to get out of here. But then you had to wait around, and like, you feel the hunger coming in, and you're like, oh my God. Come on, give me my trophy, I want to go, you know, because loads of people traveled up, so I wanted to go out and eat with them, which by the time I got the trophy, they all had to leave anyway, so I didn't even get to do that. So I just went back to the hotel and had a bath. But it was like that, literally a sensory overload. It was like, it's quite bloody overwhelming, to be fair, but if I was feeling a bit fresher, you know, I probably would have took that in a lot better. It's a good ending. Hopefully, third time lucky, maybe, Gary. You'll get it.
Yeah, I think I'll just get a day ticket when I go and watch the rugby.
just go there, watch other people come in. It seems like a better idea, doesn't it? Let's be honest.
Been to Cardiff about 100 times and never been in that castle. So, I'll go one.
Yeah, it's a good finish. A fantastic event, I would say. personally, like, if you're...
How much did you raise for charity, and which charity was it? I mean, I know, but everyone else.
Over, just over $6,000. Simon says bereavement charity. It's for, like, children, obviously, that have, like, lost their parents and stuff like that. So, yeah, but just over $6,000, actually, which is good.
Good amount, mate, yeah, isn't it? Like you say, was that kicking you on at certain points? So was it just like...
Yeah, definitely. Like, there was... Because it's... What's something I don't think people understand about that event? It's actually quite stressful if you have a partner at home, that event as well. Because they've got, like... They're dot watching you. They've got, excuse me, people messaging them all the time. How's he getting on? Da-da-da. So actually, it's quite stressful for my missus. But, like, what was quite nice is, like, she... obviously chatted to one of the girls at the charity quite a lot, and then there was like she messaged her I think it was after day three, saying, oh, like, how much James has raised now supports like 29 children for 2 years. And I was just like quite taken back by that. I was like, god, that nearly you know, who's chopping onions in here? I was like, god, yeah. So that was like quite... that was one of those moments where you just feel like, god, yeah, come on, you can just put yourself through this. But yeah,
it reminds you that people will get behind you as well. Like, people get behind you and support you and that kind of thing. It's a nice reminder sometimes. Like you say, like, I now more as a coach than a runner, because when I was doing the stuff that you're doing, say, like going into these things, not naive, but hadn't really experienced people following me and stuff before, there wasn't really tracking. So yeah, it was super... like Charlotte would... like my wife would be either, before we had kids, she would be the one that would come to the events and be the support. But it'd be a case of like my mum and maybe her parents texting her. Whereas now, if I go off and do Dragon's Back or everything, she doesn't track me through the day or anything. She'll get the odd update and just like trust the fact that it'll be all right. Because like you say, otherwise it can get really stressful with... because she, especially when I was running like the local groups and the things like that, everyone becomes your friend, and I'd be going and doing events, and she'd be getting like tens of messages, how's Gary? And they don't know, do they? They don't know anything more than the next person. But you, and then you as the runner, you're worrying about them as a supporter. So you kind of have to figure out a way to take that stress. And tracking does that to a certain extent, but it also could give people more stress. Because I imagine, because I spoke to her briefly, but on day five, when you're like a kilometer out or whatever, and the track has stopped, but what I'd realized is that everyone had stopped. So there was like a black spot, and I was thinking, well, his has stopped. I was trying to figure out, when did it stop? When did it click in? I was like, I think he'll be all right as long as he doesn't basically go wrong from this point. But kind of things. But if you were just tracking James, say, and you didn't have anyone else's on, yours has stopped and time's ticking, that's when people start panicking. Or if it's like half an inch off the actual red line in like kilometer 29 on day two or something, and you've got people messaging you, are you okay? It's like, yeah, fine, mate.
Yeah, you just stroll in. I'm like, my mate's waiting for me on day five. Yeah. One of my best mates, Alex, he popped up, and I'm just like having a chat with him and that, you know. And he's like, oh, god. And he's none the wiser, because he can't get signal, so he doesn't know that. Yeah. He knows I'm cutting it fine because it's near 10 o'clock. He's like, oh, you're just cutting it fine. But he's not going through like what other people are, because they're there with the tracker, but he can't see that. They're there with the tracker, thinking, oh my god. But I remember last year when I was following you and like Sam and that, I remember that spot is a dead spot. It's exactly the same for you guys last year, because there was like bits when I was looking at you at that day, and I was it was like there was a point, you know, sometimes I remember it actually. I looked at you at the Story Arms, and it didn't update, and it was like, I was like, oh my god, he's never getting there. And then it just went, the bit just went,
so it just pinged.
I was like, oh my god, yeah. You know, it just cuts across the neck, straight line. And I was like, oh, thank god for that. Because I ain't checked
it. Either that, or you see it going down an A road and at like 70 miles an hour, and you're like, oh, that's not good.
that's what I was looking at when I saw Simon's did that on day five. I was like, oh no, shit. He's not.
You're doing a walk of shame back down. So yeah. Would you do it again, mate? Or would you? Is it onto onto different things?
It's onto
obviously.
Different
I don't mean
events.
You have to do it next year, but
no. It's onto different events. You know, I want to do a few 50 milers. I want to do some other events that around like the lakes, some stuff in North Wales again, and I just want to do the training as like what I'd advise clients, you know, step by step over time, and then yeah, I probably would do that event again, to be fair, in a few years, just get more mileage in the legs, get better, more confident. But I definitely would work it. I think that'd be quite an experience. I think I'd quite enjoy that. I probably would do it again, because it's quite, I feel like it's a very unique event, the things that you do in that event, like compared to, I suppose, other ultras. But it is different to other ultras, isn't it, at the end of the day? That, so it is going to be like that. But I think it's definitely a great event for people to do. And if people, I don't think a lot of people know this, that I know obviously it's expensive, and I know that a lot of people, you know, it's expensive for a race. Like, so you, if you work it, you basically get credits to use on that event. I don't think a lot of people know that. So like if you work Cape Wrath,
yeah,
you know, you earn enough credits to do Cape Wrath. If you work Dragon's Back, you earn enough credits to do Dragon's Back and maybe other little events. So it's just good for people to know. But I would definitely probably do
looks
that.
Looks harder again. Than running it's it fantastic. Though, mate.
Pardon? Some of those jobs, cool. They look more tired than like the worst, the worst tired bloke who's on the actual event.
Yeah. Did you so before you go, give us like give us a paragraph maybe of if for anyone that wants to survive the Dragon's Back, what would be like your what stands out to you, like the things that you did well that got you through it.
Okay, give yourself enough time for the event. Like, how long have you been running already? I definitely think most people that don't finish this event, granted, like the heat changes the game for a lot of people, because the heat can take out a lot of experienced runners as well, right? So give yourself enough time, because I feel like people... Why do people sometimes, should we say, fail? One, because it's really hard, probably what you're going to do. But I think, you know, lack of preparation at times. Do the recces, do that sort of like in a camping style as well. That's what we did, you know. So we would run from a campsite to another campsite, just so you get good at that sort of admin, stuff like that. Be very accepting of the emotions you're going to feel in that event. Like, there was probably not really one moment where, okay, maybe on Triffin there was probably a moment where I thought, can I do this? And that was it. Because I sort of conditioned my mindset over the time before that this is going to be really hard, accept it and just keep moving. And I feel like if you can sort of do that before an event without it sounding wishy and washy, just accept that how hard this event's going to be, you know? And I think that makes it easier. So when you are in that time of it actually being hard and you're out of breath and you're dehydrated and you feel like shit and you're tired, you know, you just sort of have a word with yourself and go like, it's a privilege to be here. You've paid to be here. Just get on with it. And I found myself doing that a few times over certain days and times, you know, just having a word with yourself. Because, yeah, I don't know if there's any other points really. Enjoy it. It's a great event. But for me, it's giving yourself the time. That's the biggest point, is the time in the legs. You know, there's...
Remember that thing that I always say to people in the group, which is like, don't overestimate what you can do short term and don't underestimate what you can do long term. And that's pretty much what it is, isn't it? Like, people can jump into it a little bit too soon, maybe. And when it's going to be there in a year, in 2 years, in 4 years, just give yourself some time, just in case it's your one shot at doing it.
Like just get that volume in, I think. Something like that, anyway, you know?
Yeah.
Because it is like, it's just savage. Savage
nice
for
one, mate.
Me, a beginner. So, yeah.
It's savage for everyone because right. You see Hugh at the front, he was obviously pushing it. If you speak to Si when in his best times, it's savage, isn't it? Because you're pushing yourself no matter who you are. So whether you're pushing yourself that's to the make cool thing about it. Or pushing yourself near the front.
Yeah, that's like the one thing I noticed about like when I speak to certain people, like everyone's in the hole in that event, but everyone's at different stages. You know, the guys, the Robin, the Hugh, you look at them, they look like you, but they're just moving faster. Do you know what I mean? And they're just working at a higher intensity, you know?
I don't know, mate. You've been watching different videos of yourself.
They look pale and like the same as you and hot, but like they're just going at like 8 minute miles over this mad terrain. So,
right, on that note, mate, I'm going to wrap it up because my arse has gone numb.
Gary's glitchy bum.
Yeah, thanks for that, though. It was good. I didn't ask you too much about the event because I knew I was going to speak to you, so it was good to hear that it went well. And yeah, you had a great experience doing it, mate. Good. All right, mate. I will speak to you again soon. Thank you, mate.
Okay, mate. Thank you.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. A lot can happen in the next 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.